a boy, a very strange, enchanted boy. They say he wandered very far, over land and sea. A little shy and sad of eye, but very wise was he. And then one day, a magic day, he passed my way. And while we spoke of many things, fools and kings, this he said to me: the greatest thing you'll ever learn is just to love and be loved in return.
Hello, this is Scott Wells for the Magic Word Podcast. The year was 2009, in February, when John Calvert had come to Houston. He and I had known each other for a long number of years, and I hosted him at my home while he was here giving a lecture. So for the few nights that he was here, he was every bit the gentleman, actually dressing for breakfast and staying that way throughout the day. He would wake up in the morning, put on a coat and tie, and come downstairs, and again, never took that off until he would go to bed at night. And he and Tammy slept upstairs in the guest room and were, again, just wonderful guests, and learned a lot from him in so many ways. You know, one of the things also when he'd come to lecture was that he had some cassette tapes that he was using for his music. Now, of course, this was in the day not just of CDs, but MP3s as well. So he had not really advanced to use that kind of technology. And so the afternoon before his lecture had sat down with me to say, okay, here are the tapes. And he pulled out this big box and had them all numbered and everything. And he had a tape player. And he said, now, when I say this, you push this one. And then you take this out and put this one in. And we kind of went through a tech rehearsal here in my house for the lecture. And that was just for the lecture. I'm sure that he did those kinds of things all the time for all the shows and everything as well, that he would have to work with the sound person. But the point being is that he was still using what we consider to be old technology, I guess. But the important thing is to recognize here that he knew his niche. He knew what he was comfortable with doing, and the kinds of things that he was doing still was of the old classic style. But it was something that was uniquely him, and I think that was important, and rather is important, for all magicians to recognize who you are, know your personality, know your character, what you can do, and what you do best, and continue to do that. A lot of times, most of us, myself included, are all still looking for that magical holy grail, you know, that perfect trick, something that's going to take us to another level, something that's going to be memorable or whatever. Well, obviously that John Calvert had found so many things that already made him memorable and made him uniquely who he was in all of the world. So with that, we got to sit down and to chat for a while. I had put on my video recorder and started recording, and we taped for quite a while, had some excerpts that we split out, and I then put these over on YouTube. One was really just more or less a video interview with him, talking about his life, and then there were some outtakes in which we were talking about his family, his brothers and sisters, mother and father, and aging, basically. So these are two separate interviews that you're going to be hearing here. Prior to that, rather after that time, I've had some other occasions to work with John on stage, in which that I had interviewed him as one of my guests on my talk show that I do at magic conventions called Now You See It with Scott Wells. We had him once for his 100th anniversary, or rather 100th birthday, at the Magic Jubilee in St. Louis, and we had a big birthday cake and everything, and he was starting to get to that point where that he was, it was difficult for him to hear, and so he was responding to whatever question he thought that he heard. So Tammy was there with him and helping to make sure that he understood the question that was being asked. And then a time later, I think within the next year or so, when I was working at the Daytona Festival of Magic, again, we did the, TV talk show, Now You See It with Scott Wells, and that was fantastic because I had Celeste Evans as well as Jack Codell and John and Tammy on stage. These were all three classics or four classic magicians who will never be seen again on stage at just one particular time. I don't know whether that was actually filmed or maybe available somewhere in the archives that someone had recorded at that time, but that was a lot of fun and got to talk with each of those legendary magicians. Now, of course, John has been around the world so many times and is so well-loved. He's going to be missed, but he has left us a legacy. And again, part of that legacy is what you're going to get to hear here on the Magic Word podcast. I have, again, put these onto a video, which are on YouTube and linked on the website at themagicwordpodcast.com if you wish to watch the video. But for those of you who are traveling in your car or plane or cruise ship or whatever and just listening, want to hear the audio portion of that, I present that to you now. And so let me introduce John Calvert. Hello, this is Scott Wells, and today my guest is John Calvert. Perhaps you're familiar with his book, actually written by William Rauscher, which is The Magic and Adventures Around the World, John Calvert. It's a wonderful biography I'd highly recommend. This gentleman, as you may know, is not only a magician performer as well as an actor. He also then is a yachtsman, a pilot. He is an inventor, invented a long lens for cameras used in Hollywood still today. Has so many stories, more than we have time here today. But I did want to just have a short take, an opportunity to talk with John about a few things. And John, thank you very much. Welcome. I'm glad that you're here today.
It's a pleasure to be here.
You've been around the world and traveled so many times and done so many shows. What would you say would be one of the shows that really stands out from the rest?
Well, naturally, the first magician I saw was Howard Thurston. And I'll always remember that wonderful show. I was carried away into a land of fantasy, and it instilled in me a desire to do magic and to learn how that, not so much how the things were done, but how to present a show that would entertain people. To do a show that will entertain and not a show of puzzles.
There's a big difference there in showmanship,
yeah.
Certainly.
How did you decide,
and when did you decide, then, to be a magician? Then
I don't know that I was able to decide exactly what I was going to do, but I sort of went with the tide.
Mm-hmm.
As a matter of fact, I was doing my magic show in the States, and I was annoyed because I could not get my show on Broadway. And I promised myself, if I didn't get my show on Broadway, that was 1939, that I was going to quit magic. And we were playing the Pantages Theater in Birmingham, and a big railway carnival, the All-American Carnival, they call it, I believe, came to town, and two of the carnies came to my dressing room at the Pantages Theater and said, we'd like to put a magic, an illusion show on the Midway. Do you have anything for sale? I said, you came at the right time. I sold $50,000 worth of illusions to them for 10 cents on a dollar for $5,000.
Wow.
I threw a couple of little things that I had since I was a kid in the trunk of my car, and headed for Hollywood. Purpose unknown. And in Hollywood, I remembered that my old friend Jack Gwynn was there. He called me one day and said, I'm going out to Hollywood to take a crack at a movie. And I had his phone number, and I called him, and I said, how's everything going, Jack? And he said, fine, we're just packing now to go up the coast to play the Bert Levy circuit. I said, well, what happened to the movie deal? He said, oh, it didn't work out. So I drove over to his house, and they were just packing their things in the car, and we exchanged hugs and best wishes, and they drove away, and the phone on their back porch rang, and something said, answer that phone. I picked up the phone and said, hello, and I said, like to speak to Mr. Gwynn. I said, well, he'll be back in 6 weeks. I said, that's too late, the movie will be finished. And I said, just a minute, there's a young man here. First of all, he told me it was MGM Casting.
Okay.
And so I said, there's a young man here that does similar things to what Mr. Gwynn does. You might be interested in him. So I said, he's staying at the Hollywood Roosevelt Hotel. His name is John Calvert. So I got to the Hollywood Hotel in a few minutes and walked in up to the desk to get my key, and the desk clerk said, you just had a phone call from MGM. I said, yes, I know. And I called MGM and talked to the same person, and he said, could you come to the studio Monday morning and meet our casting director, Mr. Ben Pavitt? And I said, gladly. Now, this was Friday evening. It was Saturday, Sunday, and then Monday, and you could imagine what was going through my mind as 48 hours. When I got to the studio, to my surprise, the waiting room had about 24 magicians.
Mm-hmm. You were one of a couple.
So they put out a general call to all the magicians, and the door opened, and Ben Pavis, a huge man, said, come in, Calvert. And I almost fainted. And I walked in, and he said to his assistant, said, send the rest away, this is the man we want. I said, how do you know you want me? He said, I'm the casting director of the world's greatest studio, and I know my business. I said, yes, but how do you know me? And he said, relax, kid. I saw your show in Kansas City 3 months ago. So this should be a lesson for every magician. You never know who's in the audience.
And every show is an audition.
That's
well, let
right.
me ask you a question regarding your longevity. You're 97 now, born in 1911. Is that right? So you'll be 98 then this year. What's your birthday?
August the 5th.
August the 5th. You send cards and letters.
I was born 1911. And incidentally, I have a driver's license here that's a little bit different than most of them. If you note here, my birth date, August the 5th, 1911, and it expires August the 5th, 2011. I'll be 100.
What do you attribute your longevity right now?
Well, I don't drink, I don't smoke, and I don't eat too much. Overeating is one of the biggest problems now in the entire world.
Something has been more outstanding than another, or one award that you've received that you really are proud of?
An award I've received?
Yeah.
Applause from my audiences.
Great. Well, let me ask you then, John, what last advice do you have to give to our viewers, particularly to the young magicians today?
Well, I think it's more important than probably anything else is to remember that it's more important to entertain the audience than it is to fool the audience. If you could imagine sitting in a theater for 2 hours watching nothing but puzzles with no comedy, no entertaining value, just puzzles, sometimes mystery can be confused with puzzles. It's nice to have mystery, music, in a magical presentation, but it must be entertaining or you're wasting your time. And it's, I'd like to mention about killing time. Mm-hmm. You've heard people say, oh, this is a good trick to kill time with.
Yes.
If it's only good to kill time, it isn't worth having.
Right.
It should be a good trick that is entertaining.
Right.
So if you're killing time, you're wasting precious moments that you should be entertaining.
And that's the real key, is to have showmanship.
So if something goes wrong, always have something that you can use to fill in that time with entertainment. Don't kill time. Time is precious.
Very important thing. And that keeps everything magical. In fact, I want to thank you very much for this magical time we've had together and speaking with John Calvert. Thank you for your time. Thank you, ladies and gentlemen, for your attention. And I have enjoyed having you here then, John. I look forward to seeing you then again for your 100th birthday.
Thank you.
And now here are a few brief outtakes with John Calvert on aging.
Came to the, every Sunday, my mother would make a lavish Sunday dinner for about, a dozen people.
Mm-hmm.
And my brother was going with a girl that was a nurse in a hospital, my older brother. And he brought her every Sunday to dinner. And every Sunday after dinner was over, she'd sit around in the lounge and have not even offer to wash a dish.
Hmm.
And I said to my brother, I said, if you marry her, she's going to be a lousy housekeeper. And I was right.
Brothers, you said older brother. How many brothers and sisters do you have?
I have two brothers and one sister.
And one was younger,
my older
one
brother
older?
Passed away.
Okay.
But my baby brother is 90, and my sister is 92. I'm 97.
And how old is your older brother when he died?
He was 6 years older than I. So he would be 103.
And when did he die? How old?
If he were alive.
No. When did he die? How old was he when he did?
Oh, he died at about 80. He had prostate cancer.
Oh. Mm-hmm.
And he made a mistake of going to Mexico to have it fixed.
Oh.
Mm. You remember when they were claiming all these miracle cures?
South of the border. Now, what about your mother and father? How long did they live?
They were well along in their 80s. My father died of a stroke, and I gave my mother and dad a house in California, and I got them to move out to live in this house for a while because a friend of mine owned it and he wanted his house warmed.
Oh, okay.
And they still had their home out in Harrison, Ohio, just right on the Indiana-Ohio line. And one day mother called me at the studio and she said, I broke one of Mr. Brown's cups. And I said, well, I think I know where he bought it. I'll replace it. Don't worry. So after they'd been there a couple of months, I said, Mother, you know, Mr. Brown might sell this house. Oh, he wouldn't sell this lovely home. And then I knew they liked it. She liked it. And so I gave them the papers for it. And I gave a year's cruise around the world. And they stopped and visited us in Australia. And it was in Australia. I told you we had two beds for them.
Oh, yes. Mm-hmm.
With flowers on. The next morning, I took them their morning tea, and all the flowers were on one twin bed, and they were
in the other. So
that's why I mentioned we wouldn't have any trouble.
Yeah.
And then my father died first, and my mother didn't want to live. Her diagnosis, her reason of death was malnutrition. She didn't want to eat.
Just didn't eat. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Hmm. A lot of times that's the case. It seems like when one goes, the other one loses the will. Well, let me ask you a question regarding your longevity. You're 97 now, born in 1911. Is that right? So you'll be 98 then this year. What's your birthday?
August the 5th.
August the 5th. You send cards and letters.
I was born in 1911. And incidentally, I have a driver's license here that's a little bit different than most of them. If you note here, my birth date, August the 5th, 1911, and it expires August the 5th, 2011. I'll be 100 years old.
So what do you attribute your longevity right now?
Well, I don't drink, I don't smoke, and I don't eat too much. Overeating is one of the biggest problems out in the entire world. Mm-hmm. If you go to Walmart, you don't have to go to a circus anymore to see the fat lady and the fat man. It's unbelievable how big people are getting. I don't know how they fit in an automobile.
Well, particularly in the U.S., I believe that's true. More.
And talking now with Bill Rauscher. Hello, Bill.
Hello, Scott. Nice to see you.
Great to be here with you. I'm glad to see you here. This is the Magic Word, my podcast. I did want to ask you, since you were the author of John Calvert's biography, did you attend his 100th birthday? Or?
Well, I interviewed him at Magic in Manhattan.
Oh, yeah.
In New York, and it went very, very well. It was quite remarkable.
Tell me something about that.
Well, he was very much on that day.
Oh, good.
And my concern was he could hear what I was going to ask him.
Yes, exactly.
But we had some film clips of his career, a film clip of one of his movies as the Falcon, and
wow.
Then a series of questions, and also Tammy, I asked her questions.
Mm-hmm.
So it went very well. I was pleased. And part of it is on YouTube, if anyone would want to see it.
I would like to see that, yeah. You know, I had him as a guest, he and Tammy, at the house a while back, and I had interviewed him about aging, and I posted that on YouTube also. So talked about his family and their longevity and his secrets to long life and everything, so it's kind of interesting.
Well, he told me what I have a storehouse in my head of things he said through the years. But one of the things that stuck in my mind one time, he said, you know, he says, Bill, he says, when you get up in the morning, he says, you should be like me. I said, well, what do you mean, John? He said, well, you remember those words of Shakespeare, all the world's a stage. And I said, yes. He says, well, you see, when I get up in the morning, I go out on stage. Now, he says, what you have to remember, though, young man, he says, is that, he called me
young man.
He says, is that you always have to play the part of a younger man. One time we were on the ship, and I said, you know, I like the twilights. Well, don't you like the dawn when things begin? So what you have in this gentleman is a horizon mentality. He's not going to drag the past. He's interested in what's out there, what's going to happen, what can be done. And this has stuck with him through the years. In some ways, he's ageless. And yet, he's also a reminder of an era that's gone of the 40s. It's quite amazing. Always well-kept, always trying to look well, and always pretty much the gentleman. He told a young man once that I was with, he says, you know, he says, young man, if you want to be different, be a gentleman.
Yes.
And he said,
in today's society,
he said, if
different.
People don't like you when you walk out on the stage, you're not going to have a fan club. One time we were on the yacht, and these kids were looking at the yacht, this girl and this fellow. And that was when I was doing the book.
Yes.
And he looked, he said to me, he says, do you like this boat? He says to this fellow, oh, yes. He said, would you like to see it? And he said, well, you and your girlfriend can come on board. I'll show you the yacht. Well, this kid had long hair, and he had, you know. And he says, do you have a job? And he said, well, and the girlfriend said, no, he doesn't, but he's looking for it. He says, well, I'll tell you what to do. He says, you take him to a barber. He says, you get his hair cut. You clean him up. Now, he says, I could give him a job on this yacht touring the world, but the customs people would tear this boat to pieces. I bet that kid went and got it. You know,
probably did. Yeah, good advice.
But he's soft in that. But he's, you know, very.
He's very forceful.
Tell you what he thinks.
Tells you what he thinks. Exactly. He's opinionated.
He's a man's man and a lady's man in a way. He has a way of a magnetic way. He has true charisma. Charisma is one of the definitions of charisma is a divine kind of feeling or something. He has that, and he projects it, and boy, a lot of people like John, I'll tell you.
That's true. Let's step out of the air conditioning. Yeah. I'm directly right underneath it over here and move over here a little bit.
That's just a little bit about Calvert.
As to his charisma, I have to say that you're absolutely right. He does have it. He has that
something.
It factor.
Something you can't...
Today's reality stars, you know, they say have charisma. No, you know, they've just got a good publicist.
And
no,
another thing is, not many, I don't know how many could hold a full evening performance today.
Right.
Even if it were available.
Mm-hmm.
So many acts are flash acts. There's no time to communicate and establish your personality.
Mm-hmm.
Calvert's approach to me was, he says, you must always make them remember your name.
Right.
See? And that's true.
Right.
People see somebody do terrific things and say, oh, gee, that was great. They did. Well, what, who were they? I don't remember the name.
Perfect example. Whenever that someone comes back from a cruise ship, they say, oh, this house wonderful magician. He did this and this.
Who was he?
And they never have
that's
never
right.
remembered the person's name.
That's right.
They remember the tricks, but not the name. Now, Calvert has a way, certainly, of having people remember him, and he has a certain persona. You know, and you're right, as far as always being a gentleman. When he was the house, he'd wear a tie when he'd come down for breakfast.
Yeah,
I know.
He's of another time, yet anchored in our time. And the fact that he's lived to be 100, you know, that little book that he wrote, How to Live to be 100, I don't know whether you've seen
it. No, I haven't seen that.
Well, it's a little hardback. It's very charming. Try to get it.
It's just come out recently?
Yeah, epicproductions.com, I think they're selling. I think Sammy Smith printed it
okay.
in his publishing.
I can check with Sammy.
Yeah. But Calvert is an icon, I think.
And Tammy is just a perfect
she's wonderful.
Assistant and wife wonderful. And companion and soulmate
true.
And everything.
That's true.
You know, and she just
no
is
question
taking care of him and watching him
they
through everything.
They truly are unique, even without the magic.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
They're good people.
He has such a presence about him wherever he goes.
Yeah.
It seems like just in looking at him that you know that he is or was somebody or should be somebody famous. Like you look like somebody. Well, he has.
Well,
of course,
if he were in a room, and there were 100 people, and somebody said, "Where's John Calvert?" and you never met him, just pick somebody. They'd be able to pick him out.
That's a very good point.
You know.
Yeah.
But he's the epitome of gracious aging, really.
I would say that. And I also say, going back to the book, that was one of the most fantastic reads. That every chapter read like its own book. I mean, each chapter was its own movie into itself.
Well,
he's done so much.
Lots happened since then. I mean, that book goes back
80s,
a ways now.
When was that? 87, 8, somewhere in there?
So I spent a lot of time on the yacht with him, you know.
Yeah. Did you travel like...
we went up the Cumberland River and all that kind of thing, you know.
Now, how did he select you, or how did you find each other, I should say, to be his biographer?
I saw him as a boy. I must have been 16, so I don't know, at Lowe's Theater in New York. And for some reason, he stuck in my head for years. I don't know why, because he was, at that time, he was sort of ahead of his time. You know, I can't explain it. And it was John Calvert, his magic and model show, direct from Hollywood. And then the next time, later years, I went to a convention in New York, and he was there. And we talked and so on, and he knew that I'd done other things. And Tammy said, why don't you ask Bill to do this book, because he gets things done. Well, anyway, that led to this and that and that. And then I went down to where they had the yacht down south, and worked with him, recorded hours and hours and hours, and I checked my stories too, you know, because they were rather unusual, do you know? I mean, his encounters were, as I said, Indiana Jones-like.
Yes, very much so.
They used to say that, who is the actor that was supposed to have done all this stuff? Not
Harrison Carroll, or Harrison Ford.
No. Errol Flynn, you know.
Errol
that's
Flynn.
Yahtzee.
Okay.
But John really did all this stuff, see?
Yeah.
So, He has a lucky angel. I always said I wouldn't go on an elevator with John Kennedy. Things happen. I mean, he's accident prone, but he escapes.
Yeah, yeah. Well, but, true, like the airplane and different,
yeah,
and the yacht,
yeah,
blowing up, and
I mean,
treading water
fragile,
for 6 hours.
He's
or,
fragile, and my gosh, he's 100 years old.
Yeah,
you know? Come
yeah.
on. I don't know how he's going
yes.
to go to the Palladium, but he's going to do it.
Right.
And why not?
That's and why not?
Why not?
Well, let me ask you, as far as other books, have you got, has anyone else captured your attention like John, or is there anyone that thinks
well,
that
I've done other,
on?
I've done, as you know, the other books like Leroy
right.
and Great Raymond, and, but now...
But those were not friends of yours like John.
No, I didn't
yes,
know,
yeah.
I didn't know, but I did know Milbourne Christopher, whom I'm working on now.
Oh, fabulous.
That will be probably my last
oh,
effort.
I'd love to get a copy of that. Yeah.
And that's, I got about a number of chapters, but it takes time.
Mm-hmm.
These things don't happen. You know, books are first of all, magic books, magic history books, are financial disasters.
Mm-hmm. I don't know. I've
we
got,
we
I've
don't
got
have a great input of people that are running to read magic
right.
history. And it doesn't wind up in Borders and things like that. Trick
yeah.
books still
yeah.
go.
And DVDs.
But most tricks now are on DVDs.
Right.
I mean, you get a 16-year-old can do card fans. Well, when we had to look, read a book and figure out where to put your fingers,
right.
now you have a teacher that's showing you on a
that's
DVD.
Right.
But the history of magic is very important because it's theater history. That's the way I treat it.
Right.
Theater history, not just magic history. So Christopher I knew very, very well. And I'm in the midst of that.
See, I think that by having that sense of friendship that you know someone, that
yeah.
you could write so much
comes
easier because you know some of the story, it does come alive.
But
you know,
then again, when I did The Great Raymond, whom I knew Walter Gibson very well, I knew Lichka, mm-hmm. who was married to Raymond. But when you get into something like that, you feel sometimes you get to know the person.
Yes.
Even though you have not met them
yeah.
directly. I only saw Leroy once when I was a boy.
Mm-hmm.
My mother took me to Keensburg, and there was this old little cottage. And the outside was the cage from the Lion's Trick, you know, and I saw Leroy
oh, yeah.
coming down the road
yeah.
with a cane and spats and a mustache and a Homburg hat and a Chesterfield coat, and he turned the corner and never saw him again. And I knew his sister-in-law, Talma's sister, Elizabeth Fort, and that's how the scrapbooks of Leroy came to me, and I promised her I'd write about Leroy, which
right.
I did. So, things like that, you know.
Wow.
And then Neff, Dr. Mm-hmm. Neff and his
Phil
Madhouse
yeah.
of Mystery, that happened because I was able to locate Neff's son.
Okay.
And without him, I mean, I wouldn't have the guts of the thing, because it's one thing to write a book of, about a magician where he appeared here, he appeared there, he did this, he did. But what
just
about the man?
Yes, yes.
What was he like? What, you know, I mean, some of these people had terribly difficult lives,
mm-hmm.
And many of them died destitute.
Yeah, you know, Bill Meisner's book on...
yeah.
Sorry to say Carter, that wasn't it. That was on Keller, you know.
Yes.
It was just really kind of a documentary of, you know, newspaper clippings.
Yeah, or
he was
letters,
in the city, or
yeah.
letters and whatnot.
Yeah.
It was not interesting from the standpoint of knowing about the man.
That's correct.
You know?
What did he eat? What did he like to do?
Yeah, what are some
like?
Stories?
What
was his temperament?
Things
like that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's hard to get that, but you try. Mm.
So I know how long it takes for a book. I've been
oh, yeah, it doesn't come from on high. You see, when you do a book, and I've done other books besides mine, you're really sitting telling stories to yourself, Scott.
Yes, true. Yeah.
It's a lone, not a lonely, but it's an isolated thing.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like being in the middle of a chapter and a wife comes and says, oh, did you pay the water bill? Oh, my God, get out. I can't.
You just ruined my train of thought.
It doesn't,
there.
It's not irrelevant. You know, you can't.
Yes.
You gotta, you just get tunnel vision.
Yeah.
When I did, like, Calvin, I couldn't think of anything else.
Mm-hmm. Just immersed.
And then you have to divest yourself from being Leroy-ized, Calvert-ized, Raymond-ized, Neff-ized.
Yeah.
You know. Okay?
And that sounds great. Well, thank you very much, and I've enjoyed talking with you, and thanks for those stories and everything. I hope everybody enjoyed that as well.
What are you going to do with it?
Thank you very much, Bill. Oh, by the way, this is called the Magic Word Podcast. Let me ask you, what is your magic word? Do you have a magic word that you would use in life and magic and whatever? What would be your magic word?
Hiram Abiff.
Hiram Abiff. Now, I've not heard that one before. There you go. Thank you very much. Scotty out.
The greatest thing you'll ever learn is just to love and be dream.